All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Gene, part of the team here at Restore, and what a privilege it is this morning to come together again and experience what we've just experienced. It's been a great, great morning so far. And my prayer for this weekend has been that this would be a time of encouragement, that it would be a time of hope, and that it would get us on the road to restoration of all things, and specifically restoration of our relationships, restoration of our marriages. I don't know about you, but if you're married for more than a hot second, you've probably had some situations that you've come up against because your spouse didn't cooperate with your desires, right? Your spouse is at fault, right? You've pointed the finger a time or two, as have I. Well, this morning we're going to kind of talk about some of those things, and I hope you'll go with me in this journey. We're going to be in Matthew 5. We're continuing on in the Sermon on the Mount series. We'll talk mostly in the verses 31 and 32, and then we'll slip over to Matthew 19 at some point as well, and we'll finish up with Matthew 33 through 37. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they were endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are the words, as you know, from our founding fathers when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, proclaiming freedom from the tyranny of King George of England. These are the words that set off a chain of events that had been happening up to that point, but now it escalated, and the United States was born. I mean, that's what we have been celebrating all week long. At least our neighbors have, on all sides. M80s, I don't know what they're blowing up over there, but it is frightening at times. This idea of happiness, like we want to be happy. How many times have you said it? How many times have you heard it? I just want you to be happy. I just want to be happy. That is the pursuit that we are after, at least here in America. See, early on in this series, we talked through the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes, you know, the blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, the persecuted. Blessed. See, when Jesus was sitting on the side of that hill, this idea of happiness, this idea of blessed, was entirely new. Now, the ancients didn't consider happiness something to be achieved. What they knew was true was that there was hardship, there were trials, there was sickness and disease and death. But happiness and blessed in that ancient world? Not so much. Not so much. Except that my woman better make me happy. Women were considered property and could be kicked to the curb if they burned supper, if they turned out to be ugly, if he was just tired of her. We've all heard this one. We're just not compatible after all. For all those reasons and any others they came up with, men would issue a divorce paper and the woman would have to fend for herself. They were essentially disposable. That's the talk I'm giving today. Disposable. Remember that word as we work through this message. My 17-year-old aunt in the 1940s got pregnant without being married. This marked her life, the rest of her life. My mom was younger, And she relayed painful stories of observing how my aunt was disposable because she got pregnant at 17 without being married in the 1940s in a very conservative family. And everybody knew. But when the neighbors came to the house, she was relegated to the closet because of the embarrassment she had brought on her family. She essentially became disposable. I tell you that story to frame a picture for a few things. One is that society says, culture says that you screw it up and you're done for. You're done for. There is no hope for you. That's the message that the enemy would tell us, whether that enemy comes in the form of your mind telling you certain things or the enemy comes in the form of people around you telling you you're a loser. You will never do that a right thing that you should do. You're just done for. The other reason I tell you that story is because in the 1940s, that was a travesty. Today, it's unfortunate, but we look at it entirely differently, don't we? And I would suggest that it's a good thing that we look at it differently when it comes to and in terms of how we treat people that find themselves in a position of vulnerability, in a position where they have done something. They have acted in such a way that society would look at that and say, you're disposable. Today, I think we have a better perspective on what it means to value people. What it means to say to someone, despite your actions, we love you and we stand by you. And we will restore, we will be part of the restoration process. But as society goes, what was a travesty in 1940 is not so much that way now. What was, I remember as a kid when someone would get divorced, especially when it happened in the church, it was the thing that would set you outside and you probably weren't welcome back in again. This is not to say that these actions are things that we would endorse and want people to do, right? It is simply to say that we need to be very, very careful as we look at our society and our culture and how we as a church respond to situations like this, that we don't burn people up and that we don't dispose of them, but that we come alongside them. Not to endorse the action, but we shouldn't be so scared of coming alongside people that need us for fear that we would be representing an affirmation of what they were doing. Just have a conversation. Just tell them the love of Jesus is for them. Come alongside instead of setting outside. In this progression of the Sermon on the Mount, I mean, how many more difficult topics could we tackle here, right? Last week we talked about adultery, and today we talk about divorce, and we talk about vows. I've had, as it goes, like when I'm preparing for a message, I have multiple conversations with different people. And sometimes it's very unplanned. It just happens. I run into someone at the coffee shop, and hey, can you talk for a second? Yeah, sure. So we sit and we talk, you know. And he's going through has just come through a divorce. I had another conversation with someone that has gone through it and is a great place, and he just likes to tell jokes about it. He said, love is grand, divorce is 50 grand. You know, that was the way he approached it. I have an old friend. She's a mom to some friends I had when I was growing up as a teenager. And during that time, I wasn't aware of it, but her marriage was falling apart. And she went through a divorce, And she was part of a Mennonite church, you know, and so it was like this huge deal in a small town. And years later, she and I are in the same place. I think we were at the gym or someplace, and we were having a conversation, and she looked at me and she said, "Gene, if you ever are tempted to go down the road of separation and divorce, you better come talk to me." And she was dead serious. I've heard this over and over and over from those that have gone through divorce, that they have said, "Do the hard work. Do everything you can to stay in the marriage. Do everything you can. Because, you know what? Wherever you go, there you are. And wherever we go, even if we think the grass is greener on the other side, it still has to be mowed, right? It still has to be mowed. It still has to be nurtured. It still has to be taken care of." The other conversation I had with someone that is just going through this is that this person said, what he would say, because that was my prefaced it with, "Hey, what would you say if you were talking about this?" He said, "I would say that God is providential. God is providential. He sees you, and he will take even these days and redeem them for his purposes if we will surrender the outcomes to him." Let me say that again. I thought it was really good. God is providential. He sees you, and he will take even these days and redeem them for his purposes if we will surrender the outcomes to him. So my intention this morning is to create a framework for freedom. A framework for freedom so that we would no longer submit to the bondage, to the lies that would convince us to walk away and not look back. Instead, for us to lean into what we can control and what we can fix in our relationships, and specifically our marriage relationships. There is only one thing that you and I can do, and that is we are responsible for ourselves. So if you've been with Brenda and I when we've talked about relationships at all, you've heard us say the power of one, the power of one. Because in a marriage relationship, in relationships in general, the thing that we often do is our temptation is to look at the other person and point out all the things that are wrong with that person and expect them to change without doing the interior work that we ourselves need to do. And so this morning, I want you to hear me again say, it is the power of one. You are responsible for you. And if you can fix you, then let the other person take care of themselves in terms of fixing themselves. Just take care of yourself. Just fix yourself. Ask the Heavenly Father to come and inform you of the ways that you are missing the mark. Because I can guarantee you, if you can point it out in the other person, you are missing the mark as well. Because you're human, and I'm human, and I know my faults, and I know my failures. Just a spoiler alert here. If you're sitting here, and you're starting to put that wall up because of the subject matter, let me just tell you that my purpose in all of this, I just want to reiterate, it is for hope and healing and restoration. It is to express joy and love and acceptance for right where you are. And yes, there are, I believe, biblical concessions for divorce and remarriage. So take a deep breath out and relax, all right? We're in this together. The church has often been reluctant to dive into this conversation because we don't want to give people permission to leave a hard marriage, right? So if we say, well, there's a way out, we don't want people to take that as license to just up and leave. But we have to talk about it because we want to encourage each other. We want to encourage you to do the hard work of being in and staying in relationship. And another disclaimer, if you or your children are in harm's way, do what you need to do to get out of the situation. Make sure you're safe. This morning, there is, in my talk, everything I want to talk about is there's no judgment or condemnation if you're divorced, if you're remarried, if you're thinking about it. This should be a gathering of hope and encouragement. That is really what I hope this is. And most of all, may you know the love of Jesus because he is for you. Additionally, I would say this is not an exhaustive study, and this is where I am today. Why do we divorce? Let's get right to it. We divorce, and this is a survey that is readily found, lack of commitment, 73%. We argue too much, 56%. Infidelity, 55%. Married too young, 46%. Unrealistic expectations, 45%. And on it goes. Lack of equality in the marriage. Lack of preparation for marriage. Domestic violence or abuse, right? So though that's in a nutshell. I could stand up here and give you stats all day long because they're all readily available. And I just encourage you, if you're curious, go find them. Go find them. What we really want to know, though, is, what is true about divorce and remarriage? And then I would ask, do you really want to know? Because the truth is that this subject matter is ridiculously complex. A pastor friend of mine would always say, why didn't Jesus just take a few more sentences and be as clear as he possibly could be about this subject matter? Instead, it is one of those things that is shrouded in a little bit of mystery. And so we grapple with this hard word of Jesus. This complexity, though, is kind of hooked into our humanity. Because our humanity is self-absorbed, and our humanity is concerned about what's mine, isn't it? Mostly, if we're honest. The complexity is not so much about the word of Jesus. I mean, he was pretty straightforward in what he said. I still wish he'd have said a little more. But he was pretty straightforward. And when, and we'll read out of Matthew 19 in a minute, but when Peter and the disciples, I'm just going to say it was Peter because I could just imagine him saying this, but when Peter and the disciples heard Jesus talk about, well, you can't just dispose of your wife, you gotta stay with her. Their response was, what? Like, they weren't accustomed to having to stay with their wives. I mean, they could have more than one wife, apparently, in those days. And if they didn't like, the Mosaic law said, I mean, Moses made concessions for this and write a divorce paper and then dispose of her and let her fend for herself. This was new news to the disciples. And I think it's hilarious because it's like, if you read on in Matthew 19, I can just see Jesus and the disciples picture this talking together about this and their response. Peter's like, whoa, then how can anyone even be married? And Jesus said something along these lines. Well, some are eunuchs by birth. Some are eunuchs because someone made them that way. And Peter, some make themselves eunuchs. Can't you see him like wink and chuckle a little bit? You don't have to be married. You guys know what a eunuch is? Look it up. Then you'll get it. Disposable. We have a tendency toward life gets hard, and we want to dispose of our trials and our hardships. And hang on a second. So, I had a little help here. So, when I was growing up, we had these, right? This is a cloth diaper. Well, it is this morning, at least. So, When you have a cloth diaper, back in the day, I mean, it was always safety pins on it to close it, right? So you always hope that you didn't prick the poor child. But when you have a cloth diaper, and it gets soiled, you actually take it into the bathroom, and you stick it in the toilet, You flush it first. Then you stick it in the toilet and you rinse it off, right? You clean it. And when you're done, you put it in the diaper pail and later it gets washed, right? You keep this and you wear it again. It's already been pooped in. But you keep it and you put it on the baby again after it's clean. Then along came these little guys. They're called disposable diapers, right? Here's what you do. It gets soiled. You fold it up and you put it in the trash. Jesus calls us to take our poop, our tough situations in our lives, in our relationships, and he calls us to bring them to the cleansing water. Clean, 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 and then restore. Put it back on again. And stay with it. He calls us to clean it up, let him clean it up, and then put it back on again. And wear it. And wear it, because that's what we're called to. We're called to relationship. You know, if life gets hard and challenging, we naturally want to go to problem solving, to figure out how to reduce the pain, how to get relief, and often that comes in the form of separation from, instead of leaning into, reliable, trusting community. Here's the deal. There are some things that are super stressful in life, and the number one and number two things that stress us out, I mean, off the chart stress, the number one thing is the loss of a child. If a child dies, if your child dies, and secondly, a spouse, but mostly a child, that will escalate the stress in your life like nothing else you'll ever imagine. And secondly is divorce. Divorce. Death and divorce, the two most stressful things in your life. And it's with that premise in mind that I want us to turn to Matthew 5, 31 and 32. Here's what scriptures say. Now remember, Jesus has been talking about adultery, and now he switches and he says, "You have heard the law that says a man can divorce his wife by merely giving her a written notice of divorce. But I say that a man who divorces his wife, unless she has been unfaithful, causes her to commit adultery. And anyone who marries a divorced woman also commits adultery. You have heard it said." Here we go again. He's referring back, right? So he's referring back to Deuteronomy 24:1, which says, "Suppose a man marries a woman, but she doesn't please him. Having discovered something wrong with her, he writes a document of divorce, hands it to her, and sends her away from his house." So that's what Jesus is referring to. Now, we can't hardly read Matthew 5, 31 and 32 without also reading Matthew 19, verses 3-9. And here we go. Some Pharisees came. So Jesus is now again contending with the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, right? So the Pharisees came and tried to trap him with this question. Should a man be allowed to divorce his wife for just any reason? The Pharisees, there were a couple camps, and one of them was very liberal in their philosophy about divorce. The other one was pretty strict, and they couldn't agree. So now they come to Jesus, and they're going to see which camp he's in, right? So he says, should a man be allowed to divorce his wife for just any reason? Well, haven't you read the scriptures, Jesus asked? I love this. They record that from the beginning, and now he takes them back to Genesis, front to the very beginning. God made them male and female. Yep, they'd read that. And he said, this explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Since they are no longer two, but one, let no one split apart what God has joined together. Well, then why did Moses permit divorce? Why did Moses say in the law that a man could give his wife a written notice of divorce and send her away, they ask. Well, Jesus replied, Moses permitted divorce only as a concession to your hard hearts, but it was not what God had originally intended. And I tell you this, whoever divorces his wife and marries someone else commits adultery, and unless his wife has been unfaithful. Let's talk a minute about hard hearts. Paul Carter writes these words. He says, Hard hearts cause people to persist in sin. And hard hearts make it hard to forgive others. But following Jesus is about getting a new heart, a soft heart filled with the Holy Spirit. Such a heart is capable of change in the direction of Jesus and is capable of forgiving even the most grievous of sins. In these scriptures, Jesus is not advocating for divorce. Divorce is never mandated. What Jesus is saying, that it is permissible and remarriage allowable if sexual sin and or abandonment has occurred. My dad was a woodworker, and I watched him many times. He still does this. He will glue multiple pieces of wood together. And then he'll clamp that wood, and it adheres. I mean, it won't move. And then usually he'll sand the top, make it smooth, maybe stain it, varnish it. Try splitting that wood apart. Once it's been glued together, you might be able to pull it apart, but there's a good chance you'll pull it apart where it wasn't, like it's not on the glue line. It's probably going to happen elsewhere. When you pull those pieces apart, you don't make a clean break. There is residue there. There are pieces still contained, one to the other. And you guys, that's a picture of our marriage relationships too. It's when we pull apart what God has put together, it is difficult. Actually, it's impossible to pull that apart without some residue of each other staying. Much as we want to make a clean break, it's impossible. It's impossible. Jesus never advocates for divorce, but if we find ourselves in those situations, he is for us, he loves us, and he is a God of redemption and grace. And that's what we want to keep communicating to each and every one of us. No matter where we are, God is for us. Let's move to Matthew 5, 33 to 38. You've also heard that our ancestors were told, you must not break your vows. You must carry out the vows you make to the Lord. But I say, and again, remember, Jesus is sitting on the side of a hill telling his followers these words. But I say, don't make any vows. Do not say by heaven, because heaven is God's throne, and do not say by earth, because the earth is his footstool. And do not say by Jerusalem, for Jerusalem is the city of the great king. Do not even say by my head, for you can't turn one hair white or black. Just say a simple, yes, I will, or no, I won't. Anything beyond this is from the evil one. Have you heard, maybe you've said it, I swear to God that's true. Or little kids sometimes say, cross my heart and hope to die. One guy said, I swear on my Aunt Betty's prosthetic left leg. It was the most expensive thing he could think of. See, the Pharisees had created this whole system. Pharisees had system after system after system. They had created another system of vow making that allowed for breaking them. So if certain small nuances were present, so if you said one little thing differently than what they had prescribed, you could get away from keeping that vow. They created ways to slip out of commitments. And here Jesus is just simply saying, hey, don't lie. Tell the truth. Don't lie. Tell the truth and follow through. Some people have, and some denominations have read this and said, well, you can never swear you know, in a civil situation, like, do you swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth? No, I affirm. So some people think it's better to affirm. I don't care. Whatever you want to do with that. I don't think that's what Jesus was talking about here. The question is, are you good for your word? That's the question. According to Jesus' words, our dealings with each other should be honorable and trustworthy. When we give our word, that should be the last word. And when we as followers enter into a covenant, specifically a marriage covenant, it is till death parts us. At least that's the way the vows go whenever I do a wedding. Till death parts us. So, as your pastor, I believe any conversation around divorce needs to be preceded with a conversation about marriage and reconciliation. And if that's not possible, then we'll dive into what it means to separate. See, the very words of Jesus and the entirety of Scripture are always, always proclaiming a gospel of reconciliation. Hear me. It is a gospel of reconciliation. That's as clear as I can make it. But there are still enough gray areas around this whole topic that anything that I, beyond what I'm teaching this morning, look, it has to be on a case-by-case basis, I think. And that's hard. It's difficult. Here's what I know for sure. I know this for sure. 1 John chapter 1. God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. And if we claim that we share life with him, but keep walking in the realm of darkness, we're fooling ourselves and not living the truth. But if we keep living in the pure light that surrounds him, we share unbroken fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, continually cleanses us from all sin. Don't you love that? Jesus continually cleanses us from all sin. So if you're divorced, can you get remarried? Pray about it and get solid biblical advice. That'd be my recommendation. If you're divorced and married again, should you stay married? Don't be ridiculous, of course. Stay married. Is this sin pardonable? Yes. Despite what you may have heard and experienced, this sin is pardonable. Can God bless your marriage, your remarriage? Yes. Yes. Look, if God could establish the people of Israel through a scoundrel like Jacob, who had a couple wives and some concubines, if murderers like Moses and David and Paul can be authors of much of the Bible, then I believe that God can also bless and take what the enemy meant for evil and turn it into good for your life. We can stand on that. 1 Peter 2. So get rid. Let me preface this. If we want to live lives that matter, if we want to live lives that point people toward Jesus, if we want to live lives that are committed in relationship one to the other, then do this. Get rid of all evil behavior. Be done with all deceit, hypocrisy, jealousy, and all unkind speech. Like newborn babies, you must crave pure spiritual milk so that you will grow into a full experience of salvation. Cry out for this nourishment now that you have had a taste of the Lord's kindness. For you and you and you are chosen people. You are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. And as a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he has called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you had no identity as a people, now you are God's people. Once you received no mercy, now you have received God's mercy. Dear friends, I warn you as temporary residents and foreigners to keep away from worldly desires that wage war against your very souls. Be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. You guys, people are watching all the time. How will you then live with each other? So even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see you honorable, your honorable behavior, and they will give glory to God when he judges the world. We are not disposable. We have value, inherent value. We are not things to be used and then discarded. We are the Imago Dei. In all of creation, God chose us as the recipients of the breath of God. And as such, it matters how we treat each other. It is imperative that our anger doesn't turn to murder, and that we exercise control and resist adulterous thoughts and fantasies and actions. That our actions must say that we mean what we say and we will do what we say. Would you stand with me? Galatians 5:1, I'll close with this. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. So friends, stand firm. Then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. It is for freedom that we have been set free. As we sing this last song, you know where I'm going. I think sometimes we need some help. And if you need some help this morning, the prayer team will be up front. And they'd love to pray with you, to give you encouragement, and to come alongside in those places, especially couples. Man, if you're struggling, no shame here. You come, and we'll pray for you, and we'll encourage you. Love you guys.